Well, John, thanks a lot. This gets more fun every evening. Just can't wait till Peter's back with us.
Yeah, which I think is coming up on soon, from what I understand.
Yeah, exactly. Well, brother, we'll see you on the other side.
We'll see you there.
All right. And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
and amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-6583. Host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Wednesday night, Thursday morning, whatever, depending on where you are in this beautiful blue marble. Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, and we got a bunch of stuff lined up for the show, but we're gonna go to a phone call first, because we're very, very excited for a very, very special member of the Horn family, young Cassie, who has just been accepted to the summer program at Cornell University. This network and everyone associated could not be, any happier. So on the phone, our good friend Cassie, also known as Freckles, welcome, darling. Couldn't be prouder of you.
Hey, John.
How are you?
Good. I'm still pretty excited.
You deserve to be. I reckon you gotta be just kind of, you know, feet about 3 feet off the ground and just so excited. I mean, what an amazing opportunity, and it's an earned opportunity. That's the thing that, you know, I need to make so clear to people. Not everyone can achieve something like this. And you know, tell us a little bit about the program and what you're going to be studying.
Okay, it is a program that talks about democracy and its discontent, and it's about political traditions. So it starts off with the all of the truths that are self-evident in the Declaration, and, you know, that all men are created equal and the inalienable rights, but then it goes through how a lot of groups in this country had to struggle to get those rights. So it talks about the slaves, and it talks about women, and it talks about working people, and all the way through civil rights. And then it also deals with things like religion and conservative and liberal.
It's amazing, and I'm just imagining, you know, how unbelievably packed 3 weeks of this is going to be for them to be able to, you know, even touch on these things. I just think it's amazing. And for someone who has shown herself to be so bright, so interested in the rest of the world, for you to have this opportunity to go and study the history of things like civil rights and the fight for equality, this is like such a building, you know, such a thing to be able to build on in your future. I'm just so incredibly proud to have seen, you know, you've been through some difficult times, as people on the network know, with your family. For you to have this opportunity, I just think is just a wonderful thing. When does this start, and you're also in the process of working on a scholarship for it. Am I right?
Right. It's in July, and we sent in all of the financial stuff. My brother actually did our taxes really early, so that we could send the financial, because they needed to have the 2007 taxes. So we sent in the financial aid application, and we are gonna hear back from them. I don't know when, but we're going to hear back from them. And the financial aid is for everything there. But I'm also still looking for money to get there, because it's like $500 on a plane. So I'm looking for money. I'm going to put a donate button on my blog, I think.
I think you'll...
I'm getting 2,000 hits a day, so...
Hey...
Maybe somebody will help.
Five bucks a pop, and you'll be there and then some. The chat room's wanting me to ask you, what does your brother think?
He's really excited. He's really excited for me to go.
I would think he would be. And, you know, I know Bob has said it to you, and we mentioned this on air. You know, the world will begin for you at the border of Texas. I can only.
There's world here too.
Oh, I know. I mean, you know, I live there as well. But, you know, I'll tell you, you're going to get there, and you're going to be exposed to such a much more wide, you know, array of opinions and people. A good friend of mine in high school got her medical degree from Cornell. And it's an amazing school. I mean, you really, you know, when it comes to the United States, you could hardly do better. You know, I'm just blown away. I mean, I could feel your energy coming through my laptop when you caught me in the chat yesterday. And you know, I'm excited for you. Gail is just absolutely, you know, blown away. You know, and it's. I think you get that donate button up, you're not going to have any trouble getting there. I bet on it. because, you know, there are enough people that know you and see the potential in you that, you know, they're going to want to make this happen for you. And I cannot imagine why you wouldn't get the scholarship either. And if they don't, I reckon that there's going to be a letter writing campaign that they've never seen before.
I'm good at letter writing campaigns. That's how I got involved with the politics and being on the radio in the first place. Did you know that?
Yeah, well, yeah, I do. I still remember when you first kind of came to our attention, you know, via the Mike Malloy show and the, you know, what was going on with your brother and his service and the issues around that. So yeah, you know, I you haven't had it easy, but you haven't sat back and let the world, you know, kind of take you over. You grab the world. You've been grabbing the world by the horns and saying, "No, this is how I want it to be, and I'm going to fight for it." And it's amazing, you know. It's that old "the squeaky wheel gets the grease" kind of situation. And you've done very, very well for such a young lady. It's amazing. And we all watch in awe to see you excel. It's wonderful. You have the biggest cheering section you could imagine.
Thank you. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. And you know, when you get the whole donate thing set up, you got to send me the details. I'll make sure that I cross link from the Head On Radio Network site, and we're going to make this campaign happen so that you can go and not just be able to survive, but I would like to see you have enough money to be able to go and experience, you know, everything possible while you're there and not have to worry. I think it's just, you know, the opportunity is just too big for you to be limited in any way. And I can imagine that, you know, the entire, you know, Head On Radio Network community will just dive in and do whatever they can to help. And, you know, it's amazing how fast, you know, $5 and $10 donations can add up. I mean, it's kept us running for the past 2 years.
Okay. Well,
big round of applause for you, Cassie. Thanks for ringing in. It's always good to talk to you. It's been a long time since I've actually talked to you on air.
On the computer all the time.
Oh yeah. But it's not the same. And it's really nice to hear the excitement. It just makes it all that much more real. So you take care of yourself, darling.
Can I ask the environmental that I had talked to you about on the computer the other day?
Oh, shoot.
That at school, a kid was saying we were finishing a project, and I said that we should recycle the index cards, and he said we should throw it out. And I said,
we
should recycle it and save the planet. And he said he wanted to save the jobs of the people who were in the lumber industry. And that
and
was more important than saving the planet. And
my response,
save the planet anyway.
Yeah, my response to that is, this is obviously a kid who's reacting to the prods of his parents, and has what is unfortunately very common in this world, an extremely short-sighted, self-centered view of the world. And if they think that, you know, recycling some index cards is going to threaten that job, they're obviously not very well informed, for one. There's plenty of, you know, new pulp paper being produced from newly felled trees. And, you know, there are some times where you have to think past just yourself. And that's what makes you different from people like that. You think past your own, you know, 3 feet. And the world is a better place when more people act in that way. And so, you know, you have to kind of let it run off your back and lead by example, which I think you're a great example of. So, you know, He's just a little bit
dumb. And I called him a moron.
And did you spell it for him, Moran, so he actually understood it?
No, just...
He probably just walked away going, hey, what's he talking about? But, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, these people are going to have the reality forced upon them. And, you know, sorry, I think his dad, if it actually got to the point where, you know, his job was threatened by recycling a few index cards, then it's time for him to be retrained to do something else. Because there are new jobs being created by doing things differently. And that's something that I think people forget. Just like the whole thing with, you know, the blessing of the mountain and the coal thugs showing up and threatening the priests, you know, with their save an endangered species, save a coal miner. Well, if that job is actually affecting the health of many thousands of people, is that job worth all of that damage? And we need to stop external, you know, stop... You know, we need to take in the actual costs of the things that we do, and it's not easy. And for those that want to stay uneducated, it's really difficult. And so, like I said, the best you can do is to lead by example and prove them wrong.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Take care, darling. Good luck.
Bye.
All righty. That's Cassie, a wondrous teenage girl who is just about to discover what life is in a big way. I couldn't be prouder. And so, yeah, big round of applause for Cassie. And so we're going to move on and get to the track of the day. Boy, that was fun. She's so much fun to talk to. And I bet her brother's just got to be, you know, just, you know, absolutely over the moon with his little sister. But talk about leading by example. I know I've been talking about the whole Tibet-China Olympic torch protest stuff, and I'm very proud of the people that are going out and making noise on a subject that needs noise made and aren't listening to people that say, don't politicize the Olympics. Well, when it's China that has politicized them first. So I thought I need a good power song for today, and it didn't take me long to get to this. And this is just a great lyric. This is Audio Slave off of their debut album. It's a song. Pardon me. Coffee backing up on me. This is a track called "Set It Off," and there's. There's one lyric is kind of about Jesus and being a rebel, and the other one is it could either be Martin Luther King or it could be Malcolm X. I'm not exactly sure which. And this is probably my favorite modern rock vocalist, Mr. Chris Cornell. And this is an absolute just rockin' screamer of a song about making noise. So without further ado, Audio Slave, Set It Off. Roll it, Bob.
Thank you. everything is alright. All we need is some direction. Every time the wind blows, everything you don't know turns into a revelation. And it all ends up inside your head. Time is wasted.
I go hoarse every time I sing along with that song, and it feels so good. What is that line? Jesus at the back door, everything is all right. All I need is some direction. Every time the wind blows and everything you don't know turns into a revelation. It's one of my favorite lyrics, even though I kind of got a little tired of Audioslave on album 2. It became a little bit more of the same kind of thing, but that is just a kicker of a track. Anyway, I got green stuff. Now, the lead topic for today is a little odd. One of the subjects regarding the environment that really doesn't come up much is death. You're going to be like, what? Not like death because of global warming, but the way we deal with the dead, burials, cremations, things like that, that are really, really fairly wasteful. And Gene sent me this link from EcoGeek about the greenest way to die. And it's kind of interesting because last night on a program on the ABC here, called The New Inventors, which is a show that I love. It's a little bit of a game show. It's not really a game show, but you know, three inventors come on and they show their inventions, and then they're voted on, and the weekly winners move on to win the Inventor of the Year. And many of these inventions that are shown for the first time on this program end up going into production. And the criteria that they use for the winners that the panel goes through, and then the public actually gets to vote as well. The panel goes on need, market, and originality. And so there was actually an invention that dealt with the very same issue. Now, from EcoGeek, see, we don't think about this stuff, but cremation is actually probably the worst and most damaging kind of form of the final journey out there. Cremation creates a fair bit of pollution and uses huge amounts of energy because you have to burn the bodies at extremely high heat for, you know, health reasons. Now, here at EcoGeek, they talk about something called liquefaction. And it says... And they open up, just like I opened up the show, saying, we don't deal all that much with death on EcoGeek, but sometimes something comes along that captures our attention, interest, and, of course, our morbid fascination. A way of processing corpses called resimation is one of those things. Veterinarians have been using a similar process for years now, but us humans are now finally getting in on the action. With a tank called a resimator, the body is immersed in a 1 to 21 solution of potash lye and water. Gas-powered steam generators build up pressure within the tank as the temperature rises to around 170 degrees Celsius. Thanks to the pressure, and despite what the general news media would have you think, there is no boiling, only a chemical reaction that completely liquefies everything but the bone ash in our bodies. When the tank is opened, only the bone ash and any implants or prosthetics the person had remain. Sounds pretty gruesome, eh? It kind of reminds me of that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know the one. The thing gave me nightmares as a kid. Why even do it, you may ask? Well, this is where our interest in the technology comes in. Through talks with Sandy Sullivan, the founder of MD of Resumation Limited, I found that the average cycle in this tank is in three hours will consume around 90 kilowatts, while a cremation will consume 250 kilowatts. According to Mr. Sullivan, the total carbon footprint of Resumation is 18 times less than that of cremation. Pardon me. Additionally, Resumation is 100% mercury, a 100% mercury-free process, something neither regular burial nor cremation can boast. When the body's been fully liquefied, it has been separated into two main parts. The first is a biofluid that is basically a collection of all our building blocks, salts, sugars, peptides, and amino acids. The nutrients in this liquid are still entirely intact and can be returned to the soil to help our plants grow. Hey, that whole concept of returning to the earth. The second is basically a shadow of your bones called bone ash, pure calcium phosphate. This can be used in horticulture, ceramics, and even as a raising agent. Don't really know if I want, like, you know, bread made with bone ash, but in other words, getting resumated allows you to fully return your body to the earth without worrying about adding a bunch of unwanted stuff to the soil at the same time. And you run into the same kind of situation when it comes to just standard burial. Standard burial, you know, the coffin. And I know that this is a weird subject, but this actually does have an impact. You know, the common coffins, you know, have all kinds of, you know, petroleum finishes on it and whatnot that, you know, first of all, prevent the actual body from decomposing as quickly as it could. You're returning all these noxious chemicals into the ground, which isn't good for the water table, all that kind of stuff. And I mean, this is the reality of what goes on. Now, another thing that's dealing with this was what I saw as one of the inventions on the New Inventors. And if you go to today's show blog, there's a link where you can actually see the video of this segment of Kevin Hartley, who has been working in the burial business for years and wanted to come up with a way to make a body-only burial still have all the ceremony and formality of a coffin burial. And what this thing is it looks just like a coffin. However, the body is wrapped in a biodegradable kind of wrapping. And just like at a normal burial, the coffin is suspended above the hole. And after the service is over, by a switch, the bottom of this casket-looking device actually opens up and gently rolls the body out into the ground. And then you pull two strings, and the support mechanisms return, and you then have a body with no added chemicals because of the coffin, buried directly in the soil, ready to be returned to the earth. And I mean, this is bizarre. This is bizarre stuff. But you know, this is true. You know, I mean, in the ceremony of burial, we do a lot of toxic stuff. And you know, and the thing is designed in such a way that the actual corpse doesn't actually touch the inside of this transporter device, and it looks like a very, very nicely, you know, finished off coffin to everyone that sees it. And it's a really interesting thing, and it actually ended up being the pick last night on the show by the panel. for ingenuity. And, you know, they said, you know, could take a bit to get people to go for this kind of thing. But, you know, this is, again, trying to retrain people of what is normal. And Annette is telling me here to check something out. She says that they've already bought and paid for their plots and markers and vaults. Now I'd rather be wrapped in a sheet and buried at my family and plant a tree on top of me to give that tree life. That's exactly what this idea is. This is exactly what this idea is. And, you know, I you know, it's a morbid thing, but hey, this is kind of reality. You know, there's a huge cemetery here in Sydney. It's called the Field of Mars. And it's just kind of up the hill from a stream. So, you know, over, you know, a couple of hundred years that this place has been there, all these, you know, varnished caskets have been breaking down, and all that stuff's going to end up in the water table. And do you really need to be doing that when you're, you know, when I'm sorry, you're already dead. And, you know, I always thought, you know, I want to be cremated. You know, I don't want to take up a piece of land for all time. You know, I think that's a bit silly when land is becoming scarce and expensive. So I'd always thought about cremation, but I'd now think of either this liquefaction or this transporter idea. And the guy was saying, you know, in the services that they offer, the graves are actually quite shallow. It's only about a meter deep, not the standard 2 meters plus. And you return back to the earth. And isn't that really just very, very natural? So, you know, odd topic, I know, but I found it really interesting. And check, actually, just for fun, when you have time, check out the New Adventures site. There's some really clever stuff that people come up with there, and there's plenty of environmental inventions that come through. Mobility inventions, all kinds of things, and many of them deal with on-the-job safety. You know, there's some really, really cool things. I mean, one of the other ones last night was a thing called a rotocant, and it was actually a device for, you know, and this is something I never would have thought of. You know, the guys that actually install power poles have always had to use this huge lever device to rotate them around to, you know, install the climbing spikes, the cross pieces and whatnot. And so these guys devised a little thing that kind of hangs the pole and with a little motor rotates it around. And, you know, it saves back injuries and accidental injuries using this huge lever device that they've been using forever. You know, so it's a great little site. It's a great show. You know, it's kind of geeky. I kind of like geeky things, though. You know, good fun. Now, before going on to the next environmental story, but I have to tell you all this one. I mentioned this in the chat earlier. We've just had a major investment firm here in Australia go belly up, and there were some dodgy internal loans being done on leveraged shares, unbeknownst to the people who had invested in it, and all kinds of, you know, nonsense. And it's ended up costing the ANZ Bank something like $1 billion because they were involved in it. But where the twist comes in, and this just blew me away, the twist in the story is all the hubbub is happening up here in Sydney. And a bill collector, very famous in the Melbourne underworld, as in the Melbourne Mafia, crime families, has flown up here to Sydney to help recover funds for investors. And they covered this last night on the 7:30 report. It was absolutely hysterical. and, you know, here's a big, you know, big bruiser of a guy. You can, if you go to abc.net.au/7.30, You can actually watch the video clip of this guy landing saying, well, you know, you probably stand a better chance getting your money back with us than by other means. And I found that very interesting and kind of comical. And, you know, if I was one of these suits that ripped off small people, I would be a little bit more worried about this guy trying to come and collect than, say, the federal investigators. it's been rather comical. But anyway, moving on. Let's see. What else did I have here? Where's this one that Betsy sent me? These are the kind of things. Okay, I know new technology can bring in concerns. But I sometimes really, really, you know, cannot believe that certain things can end up becoming part of the dialogue in the way that they do. Lawmakers question safety of hybrids for blind pedestrians. Okay. I can see it, but, you know, I bet this was like a huge news story in the Texas news. This is from KEYE-TV. CBS. Hybrid cars have great gas mileage, low emissions, and are very quiet. But Wednesday, two U.S. congressmen said they're so silent they could be deadly. The lawmakers filed a bill to require all hybrids to emit more sound. Visually impaired students in Austin say they can't hear hybrids. The National Federation of the Blind is asking manufacturers of hybrid vehicles like the Toyota Prius to install an audible alert so blind and visually impaired people know when a hybrid is approaching. And I really, I'm not trying to be unfair, and I could see this being a little bit of an issue, but you know, I'm just waiting for the wrong people to grab onto this. You know, hybrid cars deadly to the blind. I got an idea. How about in the United States, you do like they have here in Australia, the crossing signals here in Australia. Not only have, you know, the green walk sign and the red don't walk light, they also have an audible function. And when it's red, there's a dit, 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 dit on your side and the other side of the crossing. So, just by the way the brain works, you can hear whether it's your direction or the other direction that is don't go. And then when it actually says go ahead, it goes into more of a fast thing on, and it makes it very, very clear. And we, you know, so I think instead of, how about making the entire system safer for the blind? The other thing that I can think of, you know, people who live in the mountains, like where there's lots of deer, will have those little attachments on the hood of the car that create a whistle that we can't hear, but things like deer can, and it alerts them that something's coming. You know, maybe something like that, but in an audible range, you know, if we had to do it. But I just... you know, this is like one of those greater good kind of things. I can just see someone trying to take this legislation to a point to try and ban hybrid cars, you know. Cars have to be noisy. Excuse me? Pardon me? You know, like I said, I'm not bagging blind people in any way, shape, or form. I just sometimes doubt the motivation when legislators bring these kind of things up. You know, as a way to try and make newer, cleaner technology scary. it's a little bit weird. And like, you know, they even they in the piece here, they say, if we get more and more hybrids and they're as quiet as they are, we are hapless as teachers, as students, as visually impaired people, because so many of the visually impaired use auditory for safe travel. You can't hear it, you're in trouble, orientation and mobility specialist Mary Faith Price said. So what about bicycles? For Arlo Robinson, a 19-year-old visually impaired student, hybrid cars are almost impossible to detect and mean another hazard when he is crossing the street. It is scary because as a blind person, I don't know what's out there in the streets. CBS 42 parked a Toyota Prius next to a gas-powered SUV. Robinson could hear the difference, or rather, not hear the Prius. Ooh, scary hybrid. That's just what how I read out of this. It's just, you know, I might be being unfair, but I think there are other ways to deal with the issue than say, gotta make the hybrid louder! No, the hybrid does not need to be one louder. No. jeez. Moving on. This is kind of an interesting one that Betsy sent me. And it has one of these headlines that makes you go, huh? And almost not click on the link. But it's, how much does solar power pollute? Mm-hmm. And this is at salon.com. And it says, when a reader told me to take a look at the March cover story of Environmental Science and Technology, Life Cycle Emissions from Photovoltaics, I expected the kind of scratcher seemingly designed to send environmentalism straight to the nearest bottle of organic locally distilled bourbon. Something along the lines of how the energy consumed and toxic emissions produced by purifying silicon would negate the renewable benefits of using the sun directly as fuel. I couldn't have been more wrong. The result of the data crunching by three researchers who studied four different photovoltaic technologies employed by 11 different European manufacturers between 2004 and 2006 could hardly be more definitive. At least 89% of air emissions associated with electricity generation could be prevented if electricity from photovoltaics displaced electricity from the grid. The four technologies under review were ribbon silicon, multicrystalline silicon, monocrystalline silicon, and thin-filmed cadmium telluride. Of the four, the thin-film cadmium telluride was the clear winner. This is the wafer technology that I've spoken of before, for the simple reason that it requires the least amount of energy to produce, and the number gets even better if solar power is used to provide some portion of electricity necessary for the various stages of solar panel construction, from mining and smelting the ore all the way to factory assembly. See, this is the whole thing about making it all mainstream. So next time you hear someone wondering how a complete life cycle assessment of solar power and greenhouse gas emissions stacks up against oil or coal, don't laugh. Commenters on this very blog have asked that very question. Send them to the March issue of Environmental Science and Technology, and I should relax. Not every assessment of the environmental friendliness of new technologies need get bogged down in irresolvable paradox. Sometimes there is a real reason for optimism. To wit, it is noted that the environmental profiles of photovoltaics are further improving as efficiencies and material utilization rates increase, and this kind of analysis needs to be updated periodically. So, end of story, end of that argument. and I like the fact that they mention, you know, and as more solar, you know, photovoltaics are used in the production of new photovoltaics, it gets even better. So there you have that. Where am I going? I mentioned earlier how happy I am about our prime minister going and pushing the Tibetan human rights concerns in China, speaking in Mandarin. I mean, you know, how anti-Bush can you get? Intellectual Democrat. or diplomat, rather. Going and speaking to your largest trading partner in their language. In their language. I just, you cannot downplay how impressive that is. And from ABC News, they say here, Prime Minister Kevin Rudd has repeated his belief that there are significant human rights problems in Tibet in a speech delivered to university students in Beijing at the start of a four-day trip to China. Mr. Rudd flew into China this morning in the midst of a diplomatic row after the Chinese government lodged verbal complaints to the Australian diplomats in Canberra and in Beijing. China is angry over Mr. Rudd's comments during a press conference with U.S. President George W. Bush earlier in his world tour when he said it was clear that human rights abuses were being committed in Tibet. He encouraged the Chinese government to discuss the future of Tibet with the Dalai Lama and promised to raise the matter in Beijing. In his speech at the university, Mr. Rudd repeated his view that Australia is concerned about the situation in Tibet. Quote, Australia, like most other countries, recognizes China's sovereignty over Tibet, but we also believe it is necessary to recognize that there are significant human rights problems in Tibet. The current situation in Tibet is of concern to Australians. We recognize the need for all parties to avoid silence and find a solution through dialogue. You gotta love this guy. However, Mr. Rudd repeated his position that there should be no boycott of the Beijing Olympic Games, as some groups and international leaders have suggested, to punish China over its crackdown on the past month of Tibetan unrest. I believe the Olympics are important for China's continuing engagement with the world, he said in a speech delivered in Mandarin. Tibetan exiled leaders say more than 150 people have been killed in the Chinese crackdown on the protests. China says it has killed no one and blamed Tibetan rioters for the deaths of 20 people. I'm sorry, I cannot buy an unarmed monk. I don't buy it. An unarmed monk becoming violent and for armed Chinese militia and paramilitary to be in fear. I don't buy it. Earlier, Foreign Affairs Department spokesman said Mr. Rudd would not back down from his position on Tibet. Good on him. We can confirm that Australian and Chinese officials have discussed the comments and our differences over Tibet, both in Beijing and Canberra. However, a senior Chinese government official has strongly criticized Mr. Rudd's comments. Tibetan Regional Government Chairman Tsingbai Punkang told a press conference that in Beijing he sees the situation differently. Australia or other countries should have better appreciation and understanding of the fact that people in Tibet are now enjoying democracy and have wonderful human rights protections. And those remarks are totally unfounded, he said. Mr. Rudd is due to meet with the Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao tomorrow, which is actually today. And we've been hearing that, you know, wonderful human rights. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Gail was telling me that there was, you know, some, I think it might have been in the UK, you know, some you know, Chinese national saying, you know, talking about, you know, shut up, you know, there's good human rights and da-da-da and freedom of speech. And then was asked, would you say this in China? Ah, but you should just butt out, I think was basically the whole thing. So, you know, not falling for it. Not falling for it. And I just, you know, I know I've been bringing this up for days, but I think it's important. And I think while it's actually out there at the moment in front of everybody, I think we need to talk about it. And I'm going to do a little bit more research myself on the whole situation, a little bit more of the history. To become better informed. And like Bob said, though, if the Dalai Lama does meet with the Chinese leadership to bring his own tea, yeah, and bring his own food, because, and, you know, one thing that I want everyone to remember, and if the subject comes up in just conversations with your friends, tell them if they don't realize it, which they probably don't, that those blue shirts surrounding the torch are Chinese paramilitary, the very same people responsible for the violence that has gone down in Tibet over the past month. It's the same group of people, and the United States let them in, the UK let them in, France let them in, but thankfully in the UK and in France, they didn't have, you know, 150 FBI on motorcycles and cops surrounding them. Who's a free country? Sure as hell ain't the United States. You must sign saying you pledge your allegiance to China to be at the final stage of the torch relay in San Francisco. Sorry, not buying it. I think it's a really, really sad example in live, real broadcast form of where free speech in this world still actually exists. And it sure as hell isn't in the United States. It sure as hell ain't in the United States. There are people that wanted to make their voices heard, and they did everything possible to make sure that that didn't happen. So, like I said, you know, here, you know, have certain people go, you hate America. No, I hate what America has become. America has become un-American. Oh, my God. Here's another one from Gene, going back, and, you know, I love technology, especially when technology proves to be handy when it comes to resources, things like that. Also from EcoGeek, great website. If you've never been there, go, ecogeek.org. Breakthrough aerogel, 37 times better than fiberglass. Check this out. Aerogel has been around for decades. It's the lightest substance ever created, being 99% air. It's strong, light, translucent, and is excellent for soundproofing. But the really exciting thing about aerogel is that it insulates 37 times better than fiberglass. Using aerogel as insulation in wall ceilings, and it's since it's transparent, even between double-paned windows, could drastically reduce the amount of energy used in heating and cooling. Unfortunately, aerogel isn't easy to make. In fact, it costs about $1,300 per pound to produce. But a Malaysian researcher at the University of Technology, Hamilton Hamden, has led a team of researchers who have created a way to produce aerogel that will be 80% cheaper. What's more, the new aerogel is produced from rice husks, a discarded agricultural product. As you might expect, Malaysia has plenty of rice husks, so they're pretty excited about the possibility of turning them into something valuable. As such, the government has given Hamden a $65 million grant to help develop a technique for the large-scale production of the new aerogels. Hamden's breakthrough was at first accidental. She wanted to do research on silica, but was having a hard time finding the raw material. One night, she saw a television program on the difficulty of disposing of rice husks. And rice husks, it turns out, are 20% silica. After 8 years of work, Hamden finally found a cheap way to produce pure silica from rice husks. And once the silica is acquired, making the aerogel is a cinch. If Dr. Hamden and her colleagues are able to use that $65 million to scale up production of this material, we should soon be able to see it everywhere. If that happens, the energy savings would be incredible. As a bonus, the production of marogel, short for Malaysian aerogel, would also make use of an abundant natural waste product. Just like biomass power, this again is one of those huge win-win situations. And it's really light. It would, it would make use of a waste material. And, you know, have you ever dealt with fiberglass insulation, installing it or removing it? It's horrible. It's horrible stuff. Splinters, you know, you need respirators and all this other stuff. I love I love these kind of things. You know, I just reckon it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So, you know, good on them. Good on them. Anything that takes a waste product and creates something that then again helps us with decreasing energy use and raw materials and things like that, you know, big applause. I mean, you can't see a negative to it. But watch, you'll have people in the fiberglass industry going, "You're taking our jobs!" Guess what? You're not competing. If that's the case, you're not competitive anymore. And isn't that actually what that whole concept of free market is supposed to be about? But then again, I'm just a crazy, you know, leftist, socialist, hippie. I don't know. Oh, but anyway, I will, you know, I will be talking continually as the Olympics get closer. I'm going to continue to talk about the issue of Tibet. You know, there are so many issues out there, and I also have to talk about Zimbabwe. I'm going to make a mental note about that tomorrow, because what's happening in Zimbabwe is also very interesting. In fact, there was the first impromptu protest by members of the opposition in the last few hours, and they organized it so well and appeared and then disappeared so quickly that it caught the Mugabe loyalists off guard, and they weren't able to actually get up to any bashings. And there seems to be now proof. A police officer has come out and said that he and other officers were told that they are employed by Mugabe, and if they didn't vote for him, they were resigning from their jobs immediately. And that is the first tangible sign of of provable fraud. And this is what we need, because they still haven't released the voting results over 11 days after the election. And, you know, we really want to build democracies. This is a great place to start. This is a really great place to start. So anyway, we're coming on the end of it, folks. Thanks for being with us again today. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for the horn section. Thanks for producing the show. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Ladder Productions for the music. Call River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You too can become part of the fight against mountaintop removal mining. As we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, "Long-haired freaky people need not apply." So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why.
Welcome to the Guy James Show. So happy to have all of you along this afternoon. We're going to have an interesting and hopefully entertaining program for you this afternoon. We got a couple of great guests. We've got Congressional Representative Barbara Lee from California is going to be on in the second hour. And the first hour, we're going to have Rick Perlstein from OurFuture.org. Rick, a great writer and always a good interview. So we look forward to having him on with us today.